Are you ready to sell more books? I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm Claire Taylor. If you're ready to get your books into the hands of the right readers
and make some more money,
you've come to the right podcast.
And now it's time to talk tips, tricks, and news to help you sell more of your books. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Books Show, episode 435. I'm Brian Cohen from Self Publishing Live, joined by Claire Taylor from FFS Media. Claire, what's going on in your world over there, Claire? It's been a few weeks removed from the joyous Kickstarter, so I'm sure there's a lot of fun going on there. I've filled out a survey, I believe. So
thanks. Awesome.
How's everything going?
Good. I just got the book off to the proofreader on Monday. Monday. And I think she just sent it back. She's quick. So that is one more thing down. So now that I have the ebook, I'll just need to go through those proofreads and then I'm going to record the audiobook, which I finally got my audiobook set up really well. I ordered a sound blanket for it and it's set up in my closet and everything. So it sounds great and I'm learning all the techniques and I think I can do it. So I will record that audiobook like a crazy woman next week and this week, just see how much I can knock out. And then once I have gone through that initial pass before I edit the audiobook or anything, you know, I'll be making those little changes like you suggested, recording the audiobook first so you can make little tweaks to the text.
Right.
So that's what I'm going to do. And then once the audiobook is recorded, I can send out the ebook. Finally, it will go out. And I think it'll go out on time as well. So that's pretty fun. I know.
That's great.
I didn't think I was going to do it. I broke one of my rules this weekend and worked on a Sunday, but it was when I finished it. And so it felt good enough that it kept me energized to start the week. So that was the whole point of not working on Sunday anyway.
I think sometimes, to get rest, sometimes you need to work so that you can feel relief.
Yes. The energy and momentum of just finishing projects is huge.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's great news. I'm excited to read it.
I'm excited for people to read it. It's just been me and my editors so far. What about you, Brian? What's new?
Same difference. I'm putting out, I think as of the time that this comes out, I will have already sent out the self-publishing and email marketing book for my Kickstarter. So I'm excited to get that out into the world. Best laid plans. Didn't quite get to the audio first for my project. So I will still need to do paperback and the audiobook and all the other wonderful rewards that will come next. But that book is just going to be such a good feeling to get out and for people to start reading it. I had a few beta folk reading it over already and they've spoken very highly of it and said, oh, now I have a lot of work to do. I'm like, yeah, but it's part of the process. So it'll be
right. Good.
So I'm excited for that to be in people's inboxes soon. And thank you to everybody who supported the project.
Yeah. It's nice to produce one of these books and people say, I have so much to do. It's like, good. I've delivered the goods.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. All right. So we've got a show. The question of the week was, what are some of the tricks you found for managing decision fatigue in your writing life? Z. Jeffries said, my answer and the answer to most of my problems is a great partner with whom I communicate well. I can give a good shrug answering a question at the end of a long day. And she knows that means me brainy, no thinky good. Then she'll take over decision making for the evening. Outside of that, it's prioritization. So the most important decisions are made while I'm freshest.
And Emily Michael said, I started ordering my groceries for pickup. I was getting no writing done on grocery shopping days and realized it was decision fatigue. Now I fill my virtual cart and swing by the store after dropping my kid at school. Saves time and so many brain cells.
Yes, as the shopper person. I completely agree with this. It's why I order the same things from the grocery store every week. Beep, 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 beep. Jason Hamilton said, severely cracking down on anything that too easily produces dopamine. I found that with less television, video games, and podcasts, I have a lot more brain space to devote to writing and decision making. Claire, you're between the two of us, you know a lot more about brain chemicals than I do. I found this answer really interesting from Jason. How does this connect up with the whole thing with decision fatigue? Because I have also found that if I'm listening to too many podcasts, I got nothing. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, a lot of this is focus. So, you know, you kind of set the tone for your day in the morning. So that first thing you eat is going to set the tone for your eating habits for the day. If you check your phone first thing in the morning, it's going to set that sort of instant gratification and dopamine hit for the rest of your day is like, that's what I need, you know, as my base level. And it becomes a lot harder to focus. But if you can stay focused, then you're doing less transitions throughout the day and fewer transitions. It's the same sort of like, okay, what do I need to do next? Now you have a new decision. But I mean, yeah, it's just a lot healthier focus-wise, I assume, is what is going on with Jason, why this works so well.
That makes a lot of sense. And you can answer the question of the week over at sellmorebookshow.com or in our Sell More Book Show After Party Facebook group. We love to hear from you. All right, let's do the tips.
And now on the Sell More Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Pretty versus profit. If you're worried that your email newsletter isn't pretty enough to keep your readers interested, you can stop worrying. The folks at Litmus did a survey of A/B tests comparing newsletter style HTML emails versus emails written in plain text, and the result may surprise you. Quote, 63% of the customer segment who converted from the email received the plain text personal approach email versus our typical messaging used in an HTML email, says Jaina Mistry of Litmus.com. Email marketing platforms love to give users a long list of templates and fancy graphical features you can use to create emails, but for most authors, those aren't necessary. Quote, it's not what great emails look like, says Rob and Kennedy of Email Marketing Heroes. Quote, in fact, you want your emails to look as close as possible to what you would send if you opened Gmail right now and sent an email to somebody, end quote. For most authors, newsletter style emails aren't worth the time either. They take longer to create, are most likely to be trapped by spam filters, and worst of all, fail to build a relationship with your reader. And because they have similar open rates but convert better, they can save you time even while selling more books. Now, Brian, I know your emails look like this.
Preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
That was my preaching to the choir alarm.
I couldn't tell if that was preaching to the choir or keep talking because I'm about to sneeze.
No. It was more like home run. Woo.
Okay. Yeah. So you already knew this. Yes.
While I'll admit that I've almost always written these kind of plain text, and I don't use exact plain text because it ends up looking a little bit weird, but no images, no hidden things, no just words and links. I've almost primarily used this other than list swaps back in the day for one of my fiction pen names, pretty much all just words. And I have never regretted it because I am not a designer. I am not a branding expert. So leave that to the rest of the gang. I have gotten more responses and more conversions, as they like to call them in here, people actually buying the books from the just regular text emails than anything having to do with graphics. So this is very validating, I would say, for folks who are worried about having to put too many graphics into an email.
Yeah, this definitely saves time, which we love. We love saving time on the Sell More Book Show. I've been thinking about this because one of my pen names is a very fancy email. Like, it's got color coordinated stuff. And yeah, that's just, it was like, well, yeah, this is what people in this genre do. So we'll do this. But I have never really liked it. It's always kind of been a pain and it looks weird in dark mode and all that. So I've been thinking about changing it to plain text. I would have to explain to my readers now we're doing plain text because I've been doing the fancy stuff for years with the branding and everything. But I would say, like, for fiction at least, sometimes you do want the book cover in the email, right?
Book cover, yeah.
Yeah. So there's some things, like, just so people don't take it like, you know, all or nothing, there's some graphics that you're going to want to put in there, your book cover, or if you're doing a promo that has a really nice graphic, including that sort of thing. For my humor list, it's plain text, but I do put in funny GIFs mm-hmm. for those of you.
For those of you who weird practice. People who say GIFs. No.
Yeah. Because that's just part of my brand is just silliness. But yeah, I think that this saves a lot of time. And I think this is a smart, you know, now you have data, guys. You have data that says you don't have to do the most.
And Claire, just as a thought, if you wanted to split test with that fancy pen name,
fun.
You
yeah.
could try and you could actually compare the results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that people do the newsletters because they're like, well, I have three things that I need to talk about, right? Newsletter style. What do you think, Brian, about just splitting that into three emails?
Split it into three emails or three sections in your newsletter with, you know, a different header for each. Mm-hmm. I've talked about multiple things in an mm-hmm. email and I usually just have an extra space. That's that's my magical solution. I have an extra carriage return.
Okay, man, fancy.
I know. I was scared to give up that big secret there, but.
You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah, extra carriage return. All right, let's go into number two. It's a gimmick, not a trick. It's an illusion.
It's all I can hear. It's just Job. It's not a trick. It's an illusion. It's an
illusion. When you're a new author, your biggest problem is obscurity. Quote, we all need to get the attention of customers, writes Nate Hofelder in his weekly email. Here's one author who put his book into a Game Boy cartridge with that goal in mind. End quote. That's right. Author Peter Dirk converted his book and installed it on Game Boy cartridges as a way of striking up conversations at book events. Quote, I don't take myself all that seriously, says Dirk on Lit Reactor. I'm here to entertain. Most of what I write is silly, and I'm looking for readers who are ready for that. The mere existence of a book on a Game Boy cartridge is a way for me to get the message across. End quote. Dirk isn't trying to make money with the book on cartridge, instead using it as a gimmick to make the experience memorable. Quote, meeting me is not going to be an experience for anyone, jokes the author. I like this guy. Coming by a table and picking up a Game Boy with a book on it, that's an experience, end quote. For instructions on how you put your own book on a Game Boy cart for your super fans, a Kickstarter reward, or just as a unique way to get attention, stop by the article at litreactor.com. Claire, I played on Game Boy as a kid. I think this is hilarious. What are your thoughts?
I think by doing this, he has immediately signaled to his readers who he yes. is and that they're his readers, right? We've got nostalgia and a little bit of geekiness, mm-hmm. right? Perfect. Not all marketing needs to have a direct, you know, line of profit from it, but that's good. That's good brand establishment.
Yeah. No, I love that. I think, you know, I was thinking back to 20 Books in Vegas and the Story Origin gang had slap bracelets and yes. that brought me back. I used it as a chip clip in my room. I took a picture of it, shared it in the group. So, I mean, it got some play from that. And I think it's fun to be fun. Nate bringing up our biggest problem is obscurity. And I've read that in books. I have a book, The 10X Rule here by Grant Cardone, who's a crazy man. But one of the things he talks about is we're all dealing with obscurity, even if a lot of people already know who we are. And so if you can find a creative way to reduce that obscurity, as long as it doesn't cost too much, I have no idea how much he spent on these Game Boy cartridges, but will probably be worth it.
Yeah. I mean, like if you look at something like Stranger Things, right? You take the nostalgia out of that and it's just a story that wouldn't have taken off.
Yep.
Right. So that nostalgia in signaling to people who it is, having them play Dungeons and Dragons, right? Having all the little arcade games that they play, the clothing, everything. It's just such a powerful draw that makes things stand apart. So this is very, very smart.
Agree.
I want one of these cartridges.
Me too. I would have to take out the Gator pinball game that I played the most on. There was also the Super Mario Brothers one, but Gator pinball was number one. So I would have to take that out for this book.
Yeah, that, you know, blow in the cartridge or whatever you need.
I know. All right. Tip three is over to you.
On the road. Road trips are a summertime tradition for many people, but for authors, a road trip can make your writing feel fresh again. The journey, the feeling of adventure, and even the mindfulness of a long drive on an open highway can have a dramatic effect on an author and give them insights into their own writing. Quote, I'm planning my next minor road trip close to home, says Chris Mays for Writers in the Storm, who plans to make the most of the opportunities away from her writing desk. It's not always easy to take your entire writing environment with you, though. While that's part of the charm, it's important to be sure you will have what you need to write all you want. You might not have access to all the digital goods that you're used to inside a vehicle, so try using good old-fashioned paper or notebooks, plus your favorite pencils or pens. If you do rely on digital goods, be sure to consider whether you'll need online access, plus extra batteries and chargers. Road trips don't have to be mere distractions. You can plan them around research, meaning museums and historical landmarks, or simply plan to stop at local diners or tourist attractions for people watching and conversation. If you're going to write off your trip, be sure to keep the receipts. And of course, take plenty of pictures to document your journey for your fans.
I like road trips.
I know. Just reading this is giving me a hit of serotonin.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever found that a road trip has reinvigorated your writing in this kind of way?
Oh, yeah. All trips. I love it. I love going out and about. I did a paranormal research trip in New Orleans for one of my books, and I just flew through that book. I had so many details and so much inspiration. And it was book 11 or 12 of the series. And I was running on fumes prior to that, but just going and seeing all of that and talking to people in different places and just being able to step out of your own patterns is really helpful for observation. What about you, Brian?
Yeah, no, I have taken a couple this summer. We had kind of taken the last couple summers off for various reasons. We were moving last year. And so we've taken a couple road trips and it's just been so fun. I think that I took them more as an opportunity to think rather than necessarily to use them as research. But I'm going to throw another wrench into this one because I did forget to mention something earlier about my self-publishing live writing to market event that tickets are now open for, and the prices go up tonight. I talked about in the webinar that I did last week how, yes, the details that you gather from going on these cool vacations are details that you can put into a book that will make you feel excited and be able to fly through it. But also during a trip like this, take time to read in your genre. Take time to make, you've gathered half of the details that might need to go into your book. Now you need to gather the trope details that go into your book. And that you can do on a road trip by taking some of that extra time that you might have for reading. Because if you want to get details right, but you're only getting half of the details right, then you're not, you know, you're might do your readers a disservice. So pretty much what that whole conference is going to be about at selfpublishinglive.com. So we're excited about that. But I feel bad hijacking this story a little bit, but it's our show. So I guess
we're allowed. You do what you want, Brian. But you raise an interesting point that writing is not just writing. Writing is reading. Writing is thinking. So these are all important parts of your career. So a lot of that guilt of like, well, I can't write. I don't have enough focus. If you can write on vacation, if you can jot down some notes on the details and every, you know, of your travels, that's great. But if you can't, you can also just think and you can get ideas and you can read books. I mean, I don't know about you, Brian, but I always pack like 5 or 6 more books than I could reasonably read in a vacation just in case I'm like, I'm not in the mood for this. I'm going to read something else. So yeah, that's one of my big excitements of going on vacation is having space to read.
Love that. Love that. Clint Eastwood once said, don't just do something, stand there.
Yes.
And so
I can't verify that he said that, but I like that quote.
That is what I have heard Clint Eastwood said. I did meet him once. I was an extra on Flags of Our Fathers. They were filming at Wrigley Field on this freezing night. And I saw him eating a hot dog and he stared me down until I wanted to cry and leave.
Okay. So
I think you were saying, that's enough, kid.
That's enough out of you.
That's enough out of you. But yeah. And my life has never been changed. So awesome.
The curse of Clint Eastwood has followed you everywhere since.
I know. I know. Whenever someone's eating a hot dog, I can't help but run away.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We should do news. So okay. Here goes. Top five.
It's time for the Sell More Books Show. Top five news. Number five.
Textbook case for NFTs. Textbook publisher Pearson wants to convert ebooks to NFTs or non-fungible tokens as a way to track and control secondhand selling of their textbooks. Quote, this is a stark departure from their normal business operations, writes Good e-readers Michael Kozlowski. Typically, Pearson sells new print textbooks or digital textbooks using a subscription platform. Print editions can be resold a number of times without the publisher making money on the secondary sales. Quote, Andy Bird, the education publisher's chief executive, said blockchain technology would allow it to place trackable codes into the digital editions of textbooks, letting them take a slice of the resale value, end quote. Blockchain technology could allow Pearson to be paid each time its books change hands. Mr. Bird said, quote, in the analog world, a Pearson textbook was resold up to 7 times. We would only participate in the first sale, and it created what is known as the secondary market, end quote. Pearson's move to digital would eliminate the secondary market for its print editions, and technology like blockchain and NFTs would allow them to participate in every sale of that particular item over its life cycle. While NFT publishing and reading might not be ready for mass market readers, technology is already in place in many schools and could be updated to support the NFT model. Hey, you know what? We're not making enough money. Let's try NFTs, was what I heard. I don't know. Yeah. What did you hear, Claire?
I think it was like a press release, but it sounded like a villain monologue to me. No, I mean, obviously,
in this new NFT reality.
On the new horizons that the world we're creating. Yeah. I have problems with a lot of this personally. I don't think that like NFT books, like fiction books, I think that'll happen eventually. There's no need for this to be blockchain. I don't see why they wouldn't just have digital versions, like ebook versions that people can buy for cheaper.
Well, then someone will learn how to rip it off and we won't make more money because we need.
Right. But like, who is ripping off the, like,
every level of.
I know, but like EPUB files or anything, right? Like those aren't the easiest thing. Yeah. People will pirate them, but like, has that really been a problem? Like, they just skip straight from like, we only do text, like physical textbooks, to now we do NFTs. Like the ebook thing never really took off, but they could have made a lot of money and they could have not printed things. Like, it's like they skipped over ebooks because they wanted to kill trees. And then they're like, you know what? Let's just kill the whole environment with blockchain, unnecessary blockchain. So, I mean, that's just my little rant, but this is typical. I mean, I'm sure we have some people listening who may work for Pearson, and you're lovely. It's not you. Your company. Yeah. You may want to reconsider though. Cause it's like, these are college students that are paying this money. You haven't gotten enough out of broke college students who are like massively taking on massive debt. I don't know. It's triggering my type one, my Enneagram one of like, this is wrong. Like, do something else. But that's just me. They will make more money if they can figure this out. But it's kind of weird for, you know, a company that lived in the past for so long to be like, let's just jump into the future with this NFT stuff. So we'll see. What do you think, Brian? Is it kinder than what I thought?
Some companies just want to watch the world burn. That's all I've got to add.
Mm-hmm.
So we can move on to story number four. All right. Here we go. Number four, over to you.
Number four.
The Ultimate Writer's Retreat. If you're passionate about books, adventurous, and willing to go barefoot, we have the ultimate writer's retreat for you. The catch is that you'd be a bookseller on the tiny island of Confunadu in the Maldives, and you'd need to stay for an entire year. And it's a no news, no shoes allowed island, says The Guardian's Donna Ferguson. Quote, the island's bookseller will need to be a self-starter who is happy to introduce themselves to guests and provide them with personalized book recommendations, says Ferguson. The successful applicant will be solely responsible for the day-to-day running of the bookshop. Quote, the applicant will be there on their own, so they're pretty much running the whole thing themselves. End quote. The island is looking for someone with bookselling or publishing experience, willing to commit to a full year. Accommodation and meals are included, plus access to the gym, spa, and the island staff's own private beach. Salary is $750 a month, with the ability to earn extra service fees by offering book-related workshops or classes to guests of the resort island. There's little in the way of internet access, so plenty of time to write. Man, Roland really buries the lead sometimes.
This is either going to end in NFTs or murder. That's what I'm seeing.
$750 a month. Wow. Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this reminds me of a job I worked the summer after I graduated college. I worked for the Ready Crew, getting the rooms ready for the next semester, and we had housing as well, but we were paid $800, and so it was even more than this job in the Maldives. But you know, these kind of things, for the right kind of person who is a nomad and loves books, maybe they would find a wonderful scenario in Confundadu.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're single, if you're young, if you don't need to think about retirement or savings at all yet, this might be really fun. I just look at this and I'm like, oh man, they're basically going to be working 24/7. So they're not going to be able to enjoy the island. But, you know, travel is travel sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like when I was in my early 20s, I applied to, there was this contest. This is before, because my wife used to work at Groupon. There's this contest from Groupon called the Groupon. And they had this, you would get $100,000 at the end of the year if you survived for the entire year on Groupons. And like you would trade them for things and whatnot. And I did apply to this thing. It would have been terrible, probably.
That sounds, yeah.
But
like you're just eating Red Robin for a year.
pretty much. But yeah, I mean, these kind of contest type things, these kind of like special things are appealing to a certain demographic, but probably not to most of our folks.
Yeah. You gotta be looking for yourself to take this job.
Enneagram 4
identity. And any Enneagram who's looking for themselves
can
find it in the Maldives.
Confundadu. All right. Let's move on to number 3.
Number 3.
I'm all a tingle. The undisputed world's greatest author has finally landed a big 5 publishing deal, reports Johnny Diamond for lithub.com. Quote, yes, it's tingle time. One of my all-time favorite literary personalities, the greatest self-published author to ever live, Chuck Tingle, has signed a 2-novel deal with Tor's Nightfire imprint, end quote. The first book in the big 5 deal is Camp Damascus, which is about a group of queer friends who begin to realize their memories of surviving a hellish gay conversion therapy camp have been stolen from them, end quote. Tingle, the pen name of a Billings, Montana author, is known for his short, eccentric gay porn featuring dinosaurs, unicorns, and even many often in the news celebrities. his books called Tinglers often have titles so long they can feel longer than the books themselves. No Stranger to Fame, Tingle's Space Raptor Butt Invasion was a finalist for a 2016 Hugo Award, although he did not win, leading him to pen the story Pounded in the Butt by Hugo Award Loss in its honor. Thanks to Lars Hedbor for the tip. Sometimes, Claire, good people have good things happen to them.
Exactly. Sometimes the good guy does win, but only in the Tingleverse.
Yes. How many different alternate realities are we going to have today?
I don't know. Like, maybe that's why I'm on the other side of you. Maybe we have slipped into the Tingleverse this week.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I would be too, frankly. Yeah. At this point, take me to the Tingleverse. Yeah, I mean, this is fun. I think we should just talk about this for the rest of the show. This is it. And then wrap it up, go home. Yeah, this has really been one of those sensations, a light in the dark for so many people, especially, you know, the author community, to just see someone who is doing something so strange.
So strange.
And whose persona is so strange. And they are making just a ton of money. Yeah. I mean, big names have shouted them out.
Right. Right. And I think, look, this is a case for being you. Like, be you, be brash and wild and yourself. And a lot of the time, it's not going to work out to be exactly the books you have in your head that you've been thinking about forever, putting those onto the page and them making you lots of money. Usually doesn't happen. But for Mr. Tingle, this did something. This made waves. And it's just so absurd and crazy that that it has succeeded.
Yeah, Chuck Tingle is such a masterclass in building a fandom. I mean, when you really look at it and the moments he has decided to take a stand, he has made it very clear who he cares about and who he doesn't care about. And that's how you build a strong fandom. I mean, going through just like Facebook posts or wherever you follow Chuck Tingle, Twitter, whatever. If you want to know how to do that, go look at Mr. Tingle.
Yeah. Yeah. So our hats off to Mr. Tingle. This brought back feelings back when Jim and I used to talk about the Bigfoot porn as our
erotica,
go-to.
Brian. Erotica.
I know. This is what Jim called it. So I'm just bringing that up. But yes, the Bigfoot erotica we used to talk about. We had people who listened to the show creating us book covers related to this. And so this is a callback to those days of yesteryear with the Selmore Book Show.
Yeah, and you got to love it when someone writes something that's totally dismissed by most people and then just makes a ton of money and gets a ton of success.
And a publishing deal.
And a publishing deal with Tor, yeah.
Yeah, so funny. So awesome. All right, let's go to number two, and it's you.
Number two.
Money, honey. 30-year-old retiree Rachel Richards earned $97,000 from Amazon last year, reports CNBC's Ryan Ermey. The author, who left her job as a financial analyst at a manufacturing firm to sell real estate, found herself in a dilemma. The people in her life were looking for help with their finances and were coming to her. Quote, I began to wonder, why aren't they learning on their own? Why aren't they reading books or listening to podcasts or looking on websites, says Richards. Then it dawned on her that the financial books available were boring and intimidating, and few were targeted towards young women. She decided to change that by writing books that were sassy, fun, and simple. Her first book, Money Honey, was self-published on Amazon in 2017, bringing in $600 in its first month, and pulled in $1,500 each month after that. Her second self-published book is Passive Income, Aggressive Retirement, a 2019 book on strategies for early retirement. Richards initially dreamed of a publishing contract, but when she learned the publishers expect you to do 99% of the marketing promotions, she changed her mind. Quote, when you get a book deal, you earn 10 to 15% royalty. When you publish on Amazon, you earn a 35% to 70%. In 2021, royalties from two titles netted Richards more than $97,000 in profit. For details on her writing, editing, publishing, and launch strategies, check out the article at CNBC.
Always love a good story of someone finding success. And this is from two books. I mean, that's not bad. $97,000 in profit from two books. It doesn't happen to everybody, unfortunately. But
no, it helps for it to be nonfiction, have the promise of if you read this, you will make a lot of money.
There is something to be said about you will make money if you read this book.
Something about that appeal makes people start spending money.
Right, right. I actually have known about Rachel for a while. Had one of the early people that I followed on TikTok as like, she seems like she kind of knows what TikTok is about. Let me follow her. And to this day, if you search the self-publishing hashtag, I think she has one of the most watched videos talking about how she self-published her book. And I actually interviewed her for a TikTok course, a mini TikTok course. And she's just does a great job marketing herself in this brand as the kind of fun, sassy, meme culture, self-published author on this subject. And so it's awesome to see her getting put into the news. Like I saw her in my feed, I saw this article, and then to have Roland find it as well and put it into the news, I was like, definitely got to drop this one. I think that when a author finds this kind of success, you want to, of course, look at the writing, editing, publishing, and launch strategies. But I think you kind of nail it here, Claire. There are certain subjects that sometimes have a better chance of taking off because maybe you can make money after you read them.
Right, right. It feels more immediately like an investment than an expense. If it does help you, you know, save money or earn more money or invest your money, then you're going to want to tell other people about it too. Mm-hmm. So it's a very, very good model. Yes. And I think it's important to note that someone who is a financial advisor essentially has looked at indie publishing and trad publishing and said, only one of these models really makes sense.
Right. Right. When a person who knows numbers looks at the numbers and decides on a certain path, maybe it makes sense to double check that path as well.
Right. If the numbers are one of your main deciding factors, then maybe the financial advisor would be a good place to look at what she's doing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Here comes number one.
And now the number one top five news item.
Know thy reader. When you're trying to sell more books, we often look to our more successful peers as examples. But just because something works for one author doesn't mean it will work for another, says BookBub's AJ Jack. Quote, it's so important to understand your own unique audience. So see, you can measure the impact of your marketing, end quote. Even if you're a new author, there are ways you can start now. One tried and true method is to research similar books and authors. Check out their cover designs, book titles, and descriptions. Study their reviews to see what their readers love. Advertising is another way to test what attracts your target audience. Quote, test campaigns are a low-risk way to learn what works, writes Jack. For example, which image, copy, or targeting options drive the most clicks? If you already have an established platform, check your analytics. These can give you a wealth of information, including which social media platform they're coming from, which pages they're visiting, and where on your site they spend the most time. Finally, don't overlook your email list. Quote, send a survey out in your newsletter to hear directly from your subscribers. You can learn so much simply by asking, and most readers would love to know that you value their input. A lot of things to unpack here. Definitely want to talk about the lead here first. Is just because a successful author is doing something doesn't mean it will work for you. So what does that mean to you, Claire?
I would almost say that usually seeing a successful author doing something really well, that usually means that's not the path for you, because what are the odds? But yeah, I think it's important to not only say, okay, if I did the same thing, I couldn't do it in the same way, so maybe I wouldn't have the same result, but also to acknowledge that there is a lure, that that person is making money. And anytime you see someone in your field making a lot of money, it's tempting to lose your head and say, that's exactly what I want, and lose sight of what you might actually want, which is something that you can get through spending money and not necessarily even spending that amount of money. So,
yeah,
you know, it's just one of those triggers that we can start to learn. When we see someone successful, our first knee-jerk reaction is going to be, I want that, right? That's a very sort of primitive, unevolved kind of take on things, but that's where our brain goes first. And then being able to go from reacting to responding with, oh, but do I really want that? Is that really what I'm after? And if I am after that, would doing that really get me in the same place? So I think those are the two big important questions to learn to consider every time you see someone who's doing really well in this industry.
Oh, that's so important. I feel like I need to highlight just, but is that what I really want? And if I did that, would I really be happy? We don't always think about that, because it's so easy to get locked into this, I want what they have so badly, I'm going to ignore reason. And
yeah, and we have been raised since early childhood to believe that if you just have enough money and enough admirers, your life will be good, right? That's very much what's been pushed on all of us, maybe not in our families, but in our cultures. And we know better, but you have to stop and think about it.
Yeah, you need to get out of the lizard brain. You need to be able to connect with that higher level of thinking. And there's different tactics. There's different books on the subject. There's lots of different ways. I would say that for me, a lot of it comes down to like pausing and not necessarily taking action until I've had a chance to think about it.
Like Clint Eastwood said, just stand there.
Stand there. Just stand. Like Clint Eastwood said while eating a hot dog at Wrigley Field.
Staring you dead in the eyes.
Staring me dead in the eyes until there were flame holes coming out of me. But yeah. So, and then we kind of go into, in this one, is talking about also from the perspective of your genre, that what a thriller author does might not necessarily help you. If you're a cozy author, what a romance author does might not help you. If you're a fantasy author, do you think it's the same deal where we see what they have and then we just kind of ignore like the fact that they're in a totally different niche, and we say, what they have, I want, give me.
Yeah.
Is that what's kind of happening there too?
Well, yeah, for sure. I would say people go, oh, they want to ignore all of the differences between their situation and the other one, because those differences don't encourage their narrative that if they can do that, so can I. So they ignore that. But not only do they ignore that, they don't use the critical thinking sometimes to say, what do I not see that they've done? And that's often the biggest difference, is what don't I know about their process? What connections do they have? What resources do they have? What skills do they have? You know, all these, you know, what time, which kind of goes back to resources, do they have that I don't, that would make it a completely different challenge for me?
Yeah. No, I think that you absolutely nail it. I have nothing to add, because I'm not trying to like say, oh, well, here's what Claire really said, because I always worry about, you know, if I just even repeat what you said. I'm not trying to steal it, because you're very, very smart at this.
Don't worry, Brett. I'm not mad at you.
Now. But when I write the book, this isn't what Claire said. It's what Brian said.
what Claire said, but better.
Yes. Explained by a man. But last kind of stuff here, obviously BookBub is of course going to say run ads. I have definitely encouraged people to run ads, not necessarily BookBub ads, because they can get a little bit pricey, but I love looking at ads as a litmus test, because if you like, the data don't lie, the data does not necessarily encourage those narratives of my amazing book is bound to sell, just only people need to see it. If you get 100 clicks or so from relevant readers and you don't sell very many copies, then you can say, oh, I might be wrong about that. Maybe I need to do some deeper digging to make sure that my research is in line with the reality of what readers want. And that is a painful, painful situation to bring people into. But
I understand the impulse to want to just ask someone, what did you do? And then do that. I like that idea. It's very appealing that I could just ask someone how they got to their success and then do that, just copy it. But even if that worked more frequently, which it almost never does, there would be a lot of surprises. And the right. testing is the way that you figure out whether it will work for you or not. So the A/B testing is super crucial. I mean, I've been running BookBub ads the past couple weeks for a few releases, and it's never the one I think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. That gets all the good clicks. It's never the one I think it's going to be. It's always some random variation. So mm-hmm. everything I think I know, it's no good. I have to trust. I have to take some risks, and I have to spend some money to get the answers.
And when you get those answers, that can yield months or years worth of a plan that were not there before. And so mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons I love the testing process, even though, yes, it costs money.
And a lot of it is stuff that I try stuff that I hear people say, oh, this worked really well for me, so I'll try it. And it is not the most successful ad.
Yeah.
So you have to try it. You can't just go, well, they said, you know, put a big red button on this one. They said, you know, highlight 99 cents or free on this one. And it didn't work for me. So I guess these don't work. You got to test. There's money involved, unfortunately, in this kind of thing. But it's investment. It's a good investment. Even if you don't sell the books right back, you have knowledge. And that's not exactly priceless, because
you can buy the NFT for it.
Right. You can blockchain that.
It's not priceless because Pearson can charge $50 for buying the third edition of the NFT.
Yeah, they're selling knowledge.
It comes with a bored ape.
I know. Perfect.
I know so little about what that means. I know it's a thing. I know it's an NFT.
There's the NFT apes. Everybody bought them.
Yeah.
Now
back in
worthless.
The day in improv comedy, The goal was to know a little bit about a lot of things so that you could make bits about it. They used to call it an A $$ genius is what that term was referred to. Mm-hmm. And I always loved being that back in the day.
Yeah. My understanding is that the NFT apes are the equivalent of Beanie Babies. That's my nostalgia tie right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I was at the tail end. I was at the tail end. My mom was really into the Beanie Babies. We had a lot of Beanie
Perfect.
Babies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was my college savings. So that didn't really work out.
Yeah. You're in a lot of debt now.
We don't need to talk about it. But we do need to talk about a question of the week. Claire, we talked about a lot of different things, but is there anything that sticks out to you as something you'd love to hear the listeners talk about?
Let's talk about road trips.
Ooh, I like that.
Let's say,
what do you want to ask?
How have you gathered information from your trips to use for your books?
Yeah.
Phrase it
better. How have you gathered information or otherwise found creative inspiration from your road trips?
Perfect. Much more elegant.
Wow, you got me halfway there. So We halfway there, Clint. No, okay.
I don't think that's a nickname I want.
Yeah, I was like, that probably isn't gonna work, but it did rhyme. So you can answer the question of the week over at Selmore Book Show. See the tingle, it got everything.
We might be in the Tingleverse this week.
I think we're in the Tingleverse. SellmoreBookshow.com or in the comments of our Facebook post on the Selmore Book Show After Party group. Claire, hot potato of wisdom, a hot tingle of wisdom. I don't know.
It's all yours, Brian. I already had fries for lunch.
Man, I'm jealous.
That's probably why I can't read right now.
The trans fats are clogging up.
Yeah, too much potato in my head.
Oh, potato. So we talked about a few tough love things today, and I think that it's important to remember that you cannot base all of your happiness on a certain level of sales. You cannot base your happiness on hitting a certain dollar amount. You can do that, certainly, but it will lead to disappointment. And so I would say today, try to find something small and achievable that you can take pride in, that you can find some gratitude for, because life is too short to be always moving the goalposts of where you hope to be. So find something small that you can be proud of, and then start looking for the next thing, because you might as well be happier while you're going through all this stuff.
Yeah. Amen, Brian. You might as well be happier.
Might as well.
We get no prizes for being miserable.
I know. There's a bar here in Chapel Hill called Might As Well. And I think it, because there's also like a well theme in town.
Oh,
so it's okay. Like this double entendre, but Might As Well. So many meanings for that.
Is there one that's called Well Actually, where you just go get mansplained at the bar?
I would love that. There is a game show. There is a game show called Actually, and it's if you haven't ever seen it, I'm going to share it with you.
Okay. Yeah.
This episode. But Claire, you've got your book that's going to be coming out to everybody soon. Did you set any kind of tentative date on that, or you're leaving it open?
My working deadline is August 19th. For those who backed at $10 or more, they'll receive the ebook on that day.
That's awesome.
The bonus chapter might take a little longer, but
I think people were very understanding of my first Kickstarter. You will be delivering way sooner than I did. So
that bonus chapter came in just over an hour before the deadline. So I was like, okay, all right, well, this will be interesting. So I need a little more time on that, but there'll be a whole book to read.
I think people will appreciate it.
I hope so.
All right. So for Claire, I'm Brian. Definitely go check out Self-Publishing Live 2023 in February. Chris Fox, Mal Cooper, Emily Carter Child, a whole bunch of cool people will be speaking at that event. Selfpublishinglive.com. Tickets go up in price tonight. So definitely check that out. So I hope you have a wonderful week of book selling. And we will talk to you next time for episode 436. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy book selling.